Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. A major earthquake and dozens of powerful aftershocks struck Nepal Saturday, destroying parts of the capital, Kathmandu, and killing more than 1,000 people. VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman in Bangkok describes the damage.
Much of Nepal's heritage has been destroyed by this earthquake. Many shrines, many temples have crumbled, essentially. A lot of the older buildings in Kathmandu have gone down. One eyewitness who was surveying the city with binoculars estimated that about 20% of the buildings in the capital, Kathmandu, have been destroyed.
VOA Steve Herman. Voting is underway in Togo. VOA's Anne Look has more.
Voters started lining up as early as 5 a.m. in the capital, Lomé. People are voting their convictions today, says this voter. You just have to look around the country to see how urgent these elections are. He says this vote comes down to whether or not you approve of how things are. President Faure Gnassingbé is seeking a third term. The Gnassingbé family has ruled Togo since the current president's father took power in a military coup in 1967. The opposition says it's time for a change. Politician Jean-Pierre Fabre is Mr. Gnassingbé's top challenger. Casting his ballot, Mr. Fabre said this act of voting is crucial. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
This is VOA News. Islamic State militants exploded three suicide car bombs at the border crossing between Iraq and Jordan Saturday in an attack officials say killed at least four Iraqi security forces. At least 10 others were reported wounded in the blasts, which were quickly claimed by the Islamic State group. The Trabil crossing, where the attack occurred, is the only official passageway between the two countries. The militants overran large parts of Iraq last year, including much of the western province of Anbar, where the Trabil crossing is located. European Union finance ministers, meeting in the Latvian capital of Riga, played down speculation Saturday that they're making plans for a potential Greek exit from the Eurozone. They also expressed hope that peer criticism would encourage Greece to implement economic reforms necessary to unlock the final payment of the bailout package offered by the Eurozone and the International Monetary Fund. Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has condemned and ordered an investigation into the killing of the prominent women's rights activist Sabeen Mahmood in the port city of Karachi. The United States Embassy in Islamabad also condemned Mahmood's slaying and offered condolences to her family, relatives, and friends. Gunmen on a motorcycle killed Mahmood late Friday, just hours after she held a forum on rest of southeastern Balochistan province, police said on Saturday. Balochistan is known as the home of a long-running insurgency in Pakistan. While the investigators have declined to give details on the possible motive for the killing, friends and colleagues describe Mahmood's death as a targeted assassination. The U.S. Homeland Security Secretary says fewer people are attempting to illegally immigrate into the country along the U.S. southwestern border. Last year, a wave of unaccompanied children immigrated into the U.S., but Secretary Jay Johnson said Friday the number of children attempting to enter the country illegally this year has declined by 45% following an aggressive campaign to stem the tide. Police in the U.S. city of Baltimore, just north of Washington, are expecting hundreds of demonstrators for Saturday's March for Justice following the death of a man who died after being in police custody. For nearly a week, there have been daily demonstrations since Freddie Gray died a week after suffering a spinal cord injury following his arrest on April 12th. He ran from police before being caught carrying a knife and was dragged into a police van. And the Hubble telescope is celebrating 25 years ago its deployment on the space shuttle Discovery. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
It's unfortunate that this has happened. We think how people are. But we're working on that.
Malawian President Peter Mutharika says recent xenophobic attacks in neighboring South Africa are unfortunate.
The disappointment is based on the fact that this may lead to a constitutional crisis, also creating an unwarranted institutional problems.
The ruling party in Burundi chooses President Pierre Nkurunziza to run for a third term, but the opposition claims the move is unconstitutional and an affront to Burundians.
The condition of the refugees in Minawao is getting shape now compared to 2 months back. You know, we were complaining of water, whatever. It was due to the increase of refugees every day.
And the number of refugees fleeing Boko Haram violence appears to have stabilized. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Malawian President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika says the recent xenophobic attacks in South Africa, targeting mostly African migrants, are unfortunate. About 4,000 Malawian citizens in South Africa were affected by the attacks. The government has since sent buses to bring the citizens home. In an exclusive interview with VOA, President Mutharika told me that he is in touch with South African President Jacob Zuma ahead of the planned Southern African Development Community, or SADC, meeting to be held in the Zimbabwean capital Harare on April 29.
It's unfortunate that this has happened. We think how people are. But we're working on that. Right now, we're repatriating our people. Yesterday, over 400 people came. And then tomorrow, about 1,000 are coming. There's a total of close to 4,000. And we hope by the end of next week, all my aunts who want to come back home, they'll come back home and to assist them in resettling them and so forth. We are doing that already. Now, in terms of long-term, well, the economies of SADC are integrated everywhere in Africa, in that area, whether it's Malawi, Tanzania, Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa, of course, Mozambique. You always find nationals from other countries. People always went to South Africa under what was called Wenela, with Waters Rand Native Labor Association. Now the new leadership, we need to deal with this, and we're working on it. After tomorrow, I'm leaving tomorrow, the foreign minister who is here will be going straight to South Africa to talk to his counterpart. I'm in touch with my brother, President Zuma. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking, and next week, we have a summit of SADC in Harare on 29th. And I'm sure we will talk about these things. And the summit is about integration.
Right.
Is that all right? Mm-hmm. So what more integration than people?
Right.
We integrate because we want to help people, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want people to have a better life.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about, integration.
But wouldn't
so human beings have got to be part of this.
Well, Mr. President, wouldn't this undermine that integration effort that you, President Zuma, and the rest in the sub-region are trying to put together to reunite the people and boost your economies, among other issues?
It could. I think we're trying to describe that. But the point is, when we're talking about integrating our economies, also, we're talking about integrating our people.
Right.
In the European Union, we have free movement of people. And the social charter, European social charter, that's the main instrument for free movement. So in an integrated economy, which is a region where you're talking about,
right,
it means that there will be free movement of people and freedom to reside in any of the countries.
Mm-hmm.
So this is part of the process. Of that, and I'm sure when we agree on integration, the structure of it, the framework of it, the issue of people should be at the center of it, because why integrate if people cannot move? across borders,
right.
People and goods mm-hmm. both have to move. Exactly. So we're doing that, and I'm sure we'll come to some kind of resolution of this.
So, President Mutharika, what is the current relationship between Lilongwe and Pretoria following these xenophobic attacks?
Well, it's the same. It only happened a week ago since I left. You know, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. As I say, the minister will be going there. We'll keep on talking. I mean, this is not the action of the government.
Yeah.
I think the government is trying to do its best. I know my brother, President Zuma, cut short his trip to Indonesia for a very important conference, Bandung Conference, 60 years of Bandung. He did not go to deal with his problem. So he's addressing it. It's the people, it's not the government, which is doing this, but it's the people who are frustrated. You have seen the demands. They feel like jobs are being taken. They feel foreigners who come in, they come without money, and a few years they are richer than the local people. So there are grievances that the people have, and I'm sure that the government is addressing those.
So, Mr. President, let me ask you, because there has been some friendly dispute between Malawi and Tanzania over Lake Malawi. They call it a different name.
Yeah.
How do you right? How do you plan to resolve that dispute? Because previous presidents have tried. You were a foreign minister. You dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
What is the new plan? What is going to be different under your administration?
At the SADC meeting, at the COMESA.
Right.
No, actually, African Union, before the commission meeting,
right.
A month earlier in February, we had a meeting. I met Faisal Chissano, came to see me, who is the chairman of this group of
right.
three leaders,
that are trying to
with
resolve.
Mohai of Botswana, and with other one? Chissano, Mohai, and Beck.
Yes.
Beck, South Africa. President Beck, so he came, and the following day we met. They had been to Malawi a month ago in November, Honorable Chissano and Honorable Mohai. They came there, and then we met President Kikwete, myself, Mr. Chissano, President Beck, and our foreign ministers. We met with a discussion. I think we concluded that this is a matter that we need to continue to discuss, that maybe we should talk more about integration of the economies rather than talk about the lake, legal issues, because I think the legal issues are very clear on the lake, other than that in dispute.
Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika is the Malawian president. He spoke with me from the nation's capital. We'll bring you part two of the interview tomorrow. Meanwhile, after weeks of xenophobic violence in South Africa and multiple efforts to end it, South African President Jacob Zuma met with leaders of organizations representing foreigners at the presidential guest house in Pretoria on Friday. Mr. Zuma assured them his government is doing all it can to ensure the attacks stop and never happen again. For VOA, Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Emerging from a five-hour closed-door meeting, both President Zuma and the heads of groups representing foreign nationals described the meeting as the best move undertaken by the government so far in eradicating xenophobic violence. Speaking to reporters, Mr. Zuma said foreign nationals are more than welcome in South Africa and no one has a right to attack them. He also announced that a special government committee has been established to give foreigners swift access to the government when they want to raise concerns.
I think all of us, the consensus is that the majority of this country are not xenophobic, but there are people, at times criminals, who use the situation for their own ends, and that therefore we need to work together because we certainly don't want this to happen. Okay.
Leaders of the foreign nationals groups used the meeting to raise a number of concerns, ranging from problems in getting residence permits to a lack of punishment for those who commit the attacks. Mark Bafu, chairman of the African Diaspora Forum, said the frank discussions they had with President Zuma made them believe that xenophobic attacks will soon be issues of the past.
With our president, we can see that this small group don't have a place in the society. Government promised that they'll work clockwise to put them where they belong.
Pafu said the groups also gave assurances they will do their best to ensure foreign nationals abide by South Africa's laws so as not to generate resentment from locals who sometimes accuse them of perpetrating crime. Bishop Dalton Adams, chairman of the Migrants Community Board, used the occasion to make a plea to South African nationals.
We want to call upon our brothers and sisters in South Africa. We don't have to go through lengths of violence and looting. We don't have to go and kill each other. Let us work together. Let us speak with each other and dialogue with each other.
President Zuma said he is confident the internal and external moves his government has taken to halt xenophobic violence will bear positive results. On the regional front, South African officials have talked to African diplomats and told them the government has adopted a zero-tolerance stance towards all forms of violence directed at foreign nationals. Within the country, Mr. Zuma has directed his ministers to go into the restive communities and preach a message of peace and tolerance. Several marches and meetings against xenophobia have been held, rallying thousands of South Africans. The government also has deployed the army to help the police patrol hotspots in Johannesburg and Durban. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Pretoria.
The Zimbabwean Electoral Commission says it has yet to decide whether to compile a new voters roll for the 2018 general elections or continue using the existing one that has been condemned as flawed by opposition and civil society groups. The electoral body says lack of funds make it difficult to compile a new voters list to be used for the election. But the opposition MDCT says a new voters roll is the only way to go. For analysis, VOA Zimbabwe Studio 7 service Rich Jack Zaba of the Election Resource Center for his take on this issue.
Honestly, we cannot clean up a rotten rat in the house when we can't even identify the rat. Zimbabweans want to see the rat chest. But no, this is the smelly rat in the house, so let's clean it. So that option certainly can only work if they want to clean it. Can only work if they start opening up about that old voters roll which they inherited or which they intend to inherit from Tobayo Mbede. But the option of a new voters roll, actually, we are saying no, there is nothing. Democracy should not fail because a nation or the state is claiming to be broke to fund it. We will not accept that. Because the moment we start accepting that or making compromises in Zimbabwe, that ZEC or electoral authorities can go it their way, claiming they have no money. The next thing they will tell us that we can't have 2018 elections because we have no money. Then we will have elections happening after 8 years.
Jack Zaba is from the Election Resource Center. He spoke with VOA Zimbabwe Studio 7 service from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare. The Burundian ruling party has chosen President Pierre Nkurunziza to run for a third five-year term. Some critics claim the move is unconstitutional and opposition groups have vowed protests. They say the move would undermine a peace deal that kept Burundi calm for a decade since the end of an ethnically fueled civil war in 2005. John Munarekeza is a member of the Burundi diaspora in the United States. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in Washington for his reaction.
I'm disappointed, of course, because he has been advised to respect the Constitution, to respect the Arusha Peace Accord of Reconciliation of Burundi, and he's done 10 years in power right now. So the disappointment is based on the fact that this may lead to a constitutional crisis, also creating an unwarranted institutional problems. So that I'm very disappointed about him deciding to run, going against the term limits that we as people have established as a guiding standard for democracy. So now...
What would you say to his supporters who argue that it's okay for him to run in the June 26th election because his first term should not count because he was chosen by Parliament rather than having been voted by the people?
To the supporters who say that the first term was not does not count, that is actually saying that for 5 years he was ruling the country unconstitutionally, and that is not true. So the peace accord of Arusha and the constitution, although there is a question about the mode of election, does not put in question the term limit of 5 years plus five. So those who are using that argument about being elected by the representatives who themselves have been elected by the people are being disingenuous, because representatives of the people are usually or legally they represent the people. So the people elected him through their representative.
I see. Now the opposition groups have vowed to protest since Mr. Nkurunziza has declared to stand. But again, this government is calling on security forces and police take action against whoever goes on the streets to protest. What does this say about stability for the country?
And it's unfortunate, because this is where you see that institutions that have been built for the last 10 years are weak now. They are being weakened by this willingness to use the country's institutions to the benefit of one individual, or at least a group of individuals, or at least the party. In the last few weeks, the Nkurunziza party, the Send the Deaf Today, has been allowed to do demonstrations and rallies in the country, and the police were allowing them and providing security for them. But when it came to anybody who's in the opposition to go out in the street, the police will crack down and have jailed so many people and some of them injured. So you can see that the institutions, the security institutions now are being used, especially the police, are being used by the current party to their own benefit. So we are seemingly heading toward a police state where the ruling party is actually confused with the state. And that is not a good development at all.
John Manirakiza is a member of the Burundian diaspora in the United States. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Washington. The number of refugees fleeing the Boko Haram insurgency from Nigeria to Cameroon has stabilized in the past month. But thousands of refugees who preferred living with Cameroonian host families, relatives have been streaming into the Nigerian refugee camp at Minawao, northern Cameroon, due to hardship. Their numbers have increased from 30,000 to close to 45,000, UN agencies say. Moki Edwin Kenzeka, who is at the Minawao refugee camp, reports for VOA that there have also been skirmishes over food and water between the refugees and host communities in surrounding villages.
If you add 3 to 81,
84.
If you add 3 to 84,
87.
Elementary students at the government primary school in Minawao are having interactive lessons with their teacher, Gadzia Rudolph, himself a refugee from Gambaru in Nigeria's Borno State. Rudolph says for more than a month, classes have not been disturbed by an influx of refugee children.
The teaching now is moving successfully, no any problem about the teaching. There is no any problem. Why? Because we are always together with the children. Now, if they say they have any problem, we might have explained it. No any problems about the children. Now, I am teaching class 1A, mathematics, English, and sound and words.
Miracle Safu, an 8-year-old refugee from Goza in Borno State, says they are having their needs met even at school.
We are very happy. We have food, we have water, we have everything. We say thank you.
Isaac Luka, president of Nigerian refugees at the camp, says for nearly 2 months there has not been an influx of new arrivals from Nigeria, but that many refugees who preferred to stay with friends and relatives have been rushing to the camp due to hardship. He says they expect to find better living conditions in the camp.
The condition of the refugees in Minawao is getting shape now compared to 2 months back. You know, we were complaining of water, whatever. It was due to the increase of refugees every day. But I think by the grace of God, things are moving very good.
Conditions are getting better because United Nations agencies, the government of Cameroon, and international non-governmental organizations have been contributing food and basic supplies for the refugees. This week, the international organization Plan Cameroon and Irish Aid contributed $160,000 toward basic needs. Powell Chattard, Plan Coordinator for Northern Cameroon, told VOA they were responding to calls made by UN Refugee Chief Antonio Guterres for the world to help the refugees who were on the brink of a humanitarian crisis.
It's a contribution which has been decided based on the need assessment that was conducted in the camp of Minawa by the UNHCR and international NGOs. So Plan Cameroon received this contribution from Irish Aid, and the non-food items that are being distributed today are made up of blankets, you have multi-purpose tanks, you have jerry cans, kitchen sets, you have mosquito nets, you have soap, and you have some tarpaulin and woven plastics.
Yao Bangomna, a leader of Gadala village that shares a boundary with the Minawao refugee camp, says he is not happy because his people who received the refugees and exhausted all they have for their well-being are not considered when food, aid and humanitarian assistance is distributed. He says he and his people should not lack food to eat, water to drink, and access to schools and hospitals, while strangers in their land are provided with everything they need. He says they shared the little food they had with the strangers and should not stay hungry now, while the people they have been helping have all they need. Powell Chattard says they are also preparing to assist host communities.
The approach is to combine the needs of the refugees, the needs of the host community, and also to address the issues of the internally displaced people. We thought that it would be good to construct boreholes for the refugees, but also to give the opportunity to the host communities to compensate the loss, to manage the pressure that they have been suffering due to this influx of refugees.
The governments of Cameroon and UNHCR say the number of refugees has increased to about 45,000, but most of them are those living host communities in Cameroon for the refugee camp as a result of hardship. Early this month, Cameroonians internally displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency complained that they were living in desperate conditions, going without food, water and medicine for days at a time. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Minawao, Northern Cameroon.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, from recent xenophobia attacks of foreign nationals in South Africa to hundreds feared dead after a migrant boat sinks off the Libyan coast, we'll take a look at the plight of immigration on the continent and the challenges African immigrants face as they seek a new opportunity in a new land. That's next time, Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent, then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Kwanza mapenzi safari, ujana ni manji ya moto, walinenaga zamani. Pili tumetoka mbali, omaratizo changamoto, tuvisa visa furani. Tatu kidonda chako kwangu maradhi, matu sonone kapo kwangu simanzi. Tatu kidonda chako kwangu maradhi, oyani sonone kapo kwangu simanzi. Kwa mahaba ulonipa nimenongewa, vurugu patashika, ai punguza kidogo, na mengine kadhalika, toto suna nielewa. Apo apo liposhika, ukiongeza kidogo, ni mwenza hota unia.
My sweetie, sweetie, number one. My baby, oh,
you're number one.
My darling,
my number one.
Roho yangu mama,
you're my number one.
My sweetie, sweetie,
number one.
My baby, oh,
you're my number one.
Oh, roho yangu mama. Na uivu sikatai, mana uchungwa mapenzi na ujua. So sije kunilagai, kaja kuzama ukani zingua. Na uivu sikatai, mana uchungwa mapenzi na ujua. So sije kunilagai, mwenzio na ugopa. Now show me how they do.
Gololo, ah, gololo, ay, gololo, tay, gololo, say. Gololo, ah, gololo, ay, and show me how you do. Gololo, ah, gololo, ay, gololo, tay, gololo, say.
Kamata, if you can see, in a chamber, keep to get
marabange marama tusi sando muziki gani
hene hepa metopi mafisa burudani tushaka shaku tuwa mapenze kaba nepo wa nyumbani
hiti ni MC unachemba kitu gani marabange marama tusi sando muziki gani
hene hepa metopi mafisa burudani
Nini mtu wenye matunda, bilele shogopi kupigwa mawe Baya wenu wengi kayumba, elimu nitupa sana kalawe
Palu jani shawishi, pongo pebe nani pagi chef chefu Kwanza nye marimu kane wa marufu, nari tamaringo paka kwa mashabiki Wabana puwa nye watoto sio riziki Na vanguza hada dezenu zina wabana mapaje nye makakandu Anye watoto mchele mchele, kwenye seo viuna mbele mbele Anye watoto mchele mchele, kwenye seo viuna mbele mbele Nimewe nye matisha, brother meni vipi webari na visha
Mina mingi najua, ila we mutemi tanzisha tata Michezo enu kutoko vua, kora nyamaze usinipige mbata Wiki ni MC, unachemba kitu gani Marabange marama tusi sando muziki gani
Hine hipa mecho pi Mosisa burudami Tushato shogu tono penzi kaba nepu wa nyumbani
Hivi ni MC Unachemba kitu gani Marabange marama tusi sando muziki gani
Hine hipa mecho pi Mosisa burudami Tushato shogu tono penzi kaba nepu wa nyumbani
Paniki, brother.
Ah, wapi, nani kapaniki. Acha uoga dogo.
Tamani la tatizo siwezi Wende ngefanya nyelewe Si alinifunza mapenzi Ikuwa sijui kamwambie Akanidekeza kishenzi Kwenye mzuri ni mwimbie So asidanganywe na gari burutani na fedha Mimi akanichukia Akaleshusha tamani penzi na lompenda Kisa mvinyo na bia Chache, wengi wanatamani wanazaga kwa tafadhali Wakisha pewa wanapotea Nenda mwambie ajiazari Naduwa njema na mwombea So asidanganywe na gari burutani na fedha Mimi akanichukia Akalishusha thamani penzi na lompenda Kisa mvinyo na bia Asidanganywe na gari burutani na fedha Mimi akanichukia Yeah.
sababu utanizingua. Nitaka jiunge na mimi, kama ni pesa we kunywa tanunua. Mimi mwanzo sikuamini, nikajuaga vya kuzua. Umemjinga ni mimi, ninaitunza wenzangu wanachukua. Ai, o mapenzi, o mapenzi lilifanya kamtoto nilii vibaya. Mie siwezi, walo nikuta weniache niseme jina. O mapenzi, lilifanya kamtoto nilii vibaya. Nana mingi, iamini kamo yo.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Yang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Yang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure to share my reflections on U.S. policy towards Africa, and at the same time, pay close attention to African opinions on and attitudes towards the United States. Every week, I pay close attention to what is going on in the world and how the broadcasters, the journalists, and scholars are looking at this phenomenon. This week, I have 3 points to share with you. All over the world, people are talking about drones. One thing that must be understood, drones have not played any important role in the contest against terrorism in Africa because of the peculiarities of African situation. Drones are only relevant in immediate dangers where casualties against civilians are most likely warranted. There were a lot of talks about using drones in the campaign against Boko Haram. And of course, cooler heads prevail, and the Nigerians went through their elections, and hopefully with the election of a northerner, the two major politics of violence in Nigeria, one going on in the south during the time of the Yar'Adua administration, but the coming to power of General Buhari hopefully could limit the conflict within Nigeria, and Nigerians will resolve their problem. When you talk about the drones, you focus mainly with regard to Afghanistan, when the United States developed this technology to deal with people living in mountainous areas where targets are more likely to be available because they may be engaged in a warfare in these high mountains. But when we talk about terrorists hiding within human shields, where human beings are contested, it makes it more and more difficult. So when you look at the battles in South America against the guerrillas in various parts of South America where they were active, the wars were won by commandos against the terrorists in mountainous areas. And this is one of the reasons why I move to the second point with regard to how U.S. military superiority is being tested by the politics of the demography of a given area and the politics of poverty, where you still have a large number of the people you are fighting whose concept of the state is still unclear. And that's why Somalia becomes the third issue of discourse. The Somali case becomes problematic because if you look at U.S. policy, it is very much involved in U.S. relations with Kenya to make sure that the Kenyans can engage America. During the Cold War, Kenya provided facilities to Mombasa and the seaports. This was against the Soviet Union, which was very much interested in getting naval powers in the Horn of Africa and in East Africa. And that was why both Somalia and Ethiopia were caught in a political battle of attraction. The Somalis danced with the Soviets. At that time, the communist movement was dominant in Ethiopia. The Somalis moved towards communism or socialism under Siad Barre, but then they were not supported by the Soviet Union. So if you talk about foreign policy, political violence, state building, nation building, you can see that the United States has been caught in these different struggles. In Iraq, where you have Saddam Hussein, who was a political dictator who threw the United States into the Middle East because of the invasion of Kuwait. And as a result of that war, we have the Gulf War number one in 1991, which brought U.S. power. There were no drones. So when you look at the narrative, what you have to understand here is that in the war against Saddam Hussein, U.S. military power came without drones. The idea of the drones came about in Afghanistan, and then later on, as a result of the emergence of Al-Qaeda's activities in Afghanistan and the Al-Qaeda supporters in Iraq. So when you now talk about drones, U.S. military presence, and the struggle against terrorism, you come to Africa, you see that the battle against the Al-Shabaab in Somalia makes the drone an important issue. And that's one reason why a number of African countries are going to be dragged in American policy towards the battle against the terrorists. Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, Djibouti, and in West Africa, Niger, Mali, where the terrorist groups were operating. So when you talk about U.S. policy and political violence, U.S. policy and terrorism, you summarize with two points to remember. One is America's foreign policy in Africa primarily is developed along political communication so as to help the democratization process in Africa. Within America, people talk about peace dividends. Within Africa, there were many African countries that came out of the one-party system. We're beginning to move in that direction. So the primary purpose of U.S. policy, in my view, should be how can we encourage big countries like Nigeria to institutionalize democracy so that they can learn from their own past with regard to the difficult task of building a nation and building a state. State building and nation building is an imperative for Nigeria. The Ghanaians, the Senegalese, the Botswanans, the Zambians, and even the Kenyans to some degree are moving in that direction. The people of Cameroon has to engage America for the same deal that is in Ghana, in Senegal, in Zambia, in Botswana. And this is why those who are looking at U.S. policy must pay close attention to U.S. policy towards economic development, cultural development, and U.S. policy towards political violence and with the war against terrorism. These are the issues that all who are looking at U.S. policy towards Africa, these issues become prominent. That's the way it is today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if you close your eyes to facts, you will learn through accidents. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Political tensions continue to rise in the Democratic Republic of the Congo ahead of next year's presidential election, following which President Joseph Kabila's mandate is set to expire. As many as 40 activists, musicians, and journalists were arrested in the capital, Kinshasa, on March 15th during a news conference held to promote greater involvement in national politics by young Congolese. The government accused organizers of inciting insurrection. Intelligence agents and police in the eastern city of Goma also arrested members of the group Struggle for Change, or Lucha, who peacefully protested the Kinshasa detentions. Four Lucha members arrested on April 7th are being held in Goma's central prison on charges of inciting disobedience to public authority. Earlier this year, at least 42 people died in Kinshasa and other cities protesting a now-abandoned plan to conduct a national census before scheduling the next elections. Activists said such a move would have allowed the president to remain in office for at least three more years, as the headcount was conducted across the huge, densely forested nation. President Kabila, who has held office since 2001, is constitutionally barred from running for a third term in presidential elections set for November 2016. The DRC struggled through years of war, which claimed more than 5 million lives. Strengthening security and political stability is essential for the future of the DRC and the Great Lakes region. As the DRC enters its electoral cycle, it is especially important that the government uphold the constitutional rights of all citizens to the freedoms of assembly and expression, and ensure that the electoral process is transparent, inclusive, and peaceful. The credibility of an election depends not only on the day votes are cast, but on the entire electoral process. Consequently, the United States is deeply concerned by the ongoing detention, without formal charges or regular access to legal counsel, of youth activists by the government of the DRC. We call on the Congolese leaders to ensure that these detainees and all detainees are afforded full due process and released immediately if no charges are warranted.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.